Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Pi Kappa Lambda Honors Induction Ceremony Set. The UTPB Music Department is holding an induction ceremony for students who have been accepted into Pi Kappa Lambda, a music honor society. The ceremony will be held at noon December 4th in the Mason Rehearsal Hall in the academic wing of the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Sewell issues Empty Stocking Fund Matching Challenge. Christmas looks even brighter for needy Odessans following a generous $50,000 challenge campaign today from the Sewell family of companies to benefit Odessa's Empty Stocking Fund. The company will match up to $50,000 as donations roll in for this 29th year of the Empty Stocking Fund. The fundraising will end on December 18th. Currently, the fund has $1,465 in donations. The Empty Stocking Fund, an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army, provides a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree for needy seniors and children. Odessa Salvation Army Captain Stephanie Vincent was thrilled about the challenge. "I am blown away by this generous gift by the Sewell family of companies. Those donations will help us in a great way to bring Christmas joy to so many families in our community. We are grateful to all those in our community who, by their generous help, us help others in our community. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The 29th year of the Empty Stocking Fund has a $100,000 goal to meet the needs in our community. The fund helps families who are struggling to make ends meet. Many are single moms and grandmothers trying to raise family in tough economic times. Funds donated to the Empty Stocking Fund stay in Ector County and help local families. All those who are helped are vetted by the Salvation Army staff. This is not the first year the Sewell family of companies has come to the aid of the Salvation Army. A $50,000 challenge was issued in 2021, and the community stepped up and even surpassed the year's $100,000 goal. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.24 million. Want to help? Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Both zip codes are 79761. Donate online at tinyurl.com/393573YF. Want to know more? Call 332-0738. What is it? The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.24 million. Empty Stocking Funds enable the Salvation Army to provide toys and food baskets to needy families in Odessa. This year's goal is $100,000. OPD investigating jewelry theft. The Odessa Police Department is investigating a theft that occurred November 16th at Permian Pawn and Jewelry, located at 1229 East 8th Street. Investigation revealed that an unknown male stole two gold necklaces valued at approximately $5,700. The suspect then fled the scene in a tan Ford F-150, a news release said. Anyone who recognizes the suspect shown in the surveillance footage is encouraged to contact Detective M. Troglin at 432-284-2012 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-00-13-58-7. Fill the stocking. Some Odessa families know a happy holiday could be out of reach this year, but can get help through the Empty Stocking Fund. Simone, not her real name, is a single mom of a 9-year-old daughter. They do not get financial assistance, but Simone cleans homes, sells tamales, and does odd jobs to get by. Many in our community, like Simone and her daughter, need help this year, as a Merry Christmas meal and get gifts for the kiddos are simply out of reach. Will you help the needy in Odessa have a Merry Christmas? The 29th year of the Empty Stocking Fund has a $100,000 goal to meet the needs in our community. The fund helps families who are struggling to make ends meet. Many are single moms and grandmothers trying to raise money for family in tough economic times. Funds donated to the Empty Stocking Fund stay in Ector County and help local families like that of Simone. The Empty Stocking Fund are annual fundraising efforts by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army, providing a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree for needy seniors and children. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant Street, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. Empty stocking totals, Kelly Bashong, $50. Previous total, $1,300. Today's total, $50. Grand total, $1,350. This year's goal, $100,000. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grand, Suite 800. Both zip codes are 79761. Donate online at tinyurl.com/2p8dhde7. Murder suspect in custody, a 57-year-old Odessa man, was arrested on suspicion of murder Tuesday in the death of a local resident. According to the City of Odessa, police officers responded to a shooting call in the 4300 block of Clover Avenue shortly before 4:30 p.m. Tuesday. When they arrived, they found John Michael Adato, 38, dead, and they took Carlos Ruben Cruz into custody. Cruz was later arrested on suspicion of murder and theft of firearm and booked into the Ector County Jail. No bond has been set as of Wednesday morning. The investigation continues. Obituaries. Joe Ebert obituary. Joe Danny Ebert, a member of the Osage Tribe, was born June 15, 1948, in Powell, Wyoming, and passed away November 22 in Big Spring, Texas. Joe is preceded in death by his brothers Flash Ebert of Odessa and Gurney Ebert of Ovid, Colorado, as well as his niece, Deshae Ebert of Odessa. Joe is remembered by all as a kind and caring individual who lived for his Christian beliefs, love of family, community, and country, and as someone who faced a lifelong, debilitating war wound with great courage. His interment is at Sunset Memorial Garden Cemetery in Odessa at 3 p.m. on Friday, December 1st. Betty Earlene Wall. Betty Earlene Wall, age 90, went to be with the Lord on Wednesday, November 22nd. Betty was born on September 13, 1933, in Perry County, Tennessee, to Leonard Easley DePriest and Vera Elizabeth Morris DePriest. She married Lewis Wall on December 22, 1951. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that a donation be made in her honor to Northside Baptist or any charity of your choice. A graveside service for Betty will be held Tuesday, December 5th at 11 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens, 6801 East I-20 BL, Odessa. Mary Livingston Anderson. Mary Livingston Anderson, 100, died Saturday, November 18th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Barbara Janine Belcher. Barbara Belcher passed away peacefully from this earth to eternity on November 20th. Barbara was born July 26, 1937 in Ira Ann, Texas, to John and Virginia Monroe. Barbara will be laid to rest December 2nd at 10 a.m. in Restland Cemetery in Ira Ann. Online condolences may be made at www.clementswilcoxfuneralhome.com. Billy Deal. Billy Deal, 54, of Odessa, died Thursday, November 23rd in Dallas. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, December 14th at Emmanuel Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Christopher De La Cruz. Christopher De La Cruz, 52, departed this world on November 9th in El Paso, Texas. He was a devoted husband, father, grandfather, and friend, leaving behind a profound legacy to cherish his beloved wife and four children. He is survived by his wife of 27 years, Donna De La Cruz, of El Paso, two sons, Daniel Munguia of Odessa and Christopher Lozano of El Paso, two daughters, Crystal Polk of El Paso and Brittany Landrum, and husband Jacob of Odessa. A memorial service to celebrate Christopher's life will be held on December 9th at 4 p.m. at Purpose Church, located at 1618 East Murphy Street, Odessa. Justin Holdridge. Justin Holdridge, 52, of Odessa, passed from this life November 26th in Dallas. Justin was born February 22nd, 1971, in Odessa and resided there most all his life. He was lovingly adopted and raised by John Earl Holdridge and Renee Beth Ragsdale Holdridge. Graveside service will be held Thursday, November 30th at 2 p.m. at Oliver Springs Cemetery, located at De Leon, Texas, with Dr. Cliff Holdridge officiating. OC celebrates entry into OSHA Alliance program. Taking a step toward helping to make the workplace safer, Odessa College's safety training program on Wednesday celebrated its entry into the OSHA Alliance program. A signing ceremony was held at the Safety Training Center and attended by OSHA representatives, OC faculty, staff, and administrators, and OC Tech's students. Associate Vice President for Adult Continuing and Workforce Education, Tiffany Price, emceed the ceremony. "This is an exciting day for us at Odessa College," Price said. Through the Alliance program created in 2002, OSHA establishes formal relationships with groups committed to worker safety and health and collaborates with them to prevent workplace fatalities, injuries, and illnesses. These groups include trade and professional associations, labor unions, educational institutions, community and faith-based groups, and government agencies, a news release said. OSHA and Alliance participants collaborate to provide workplace safety and health awareness for workers' rights and employers' responsibilities under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Dean McCann, Safety Training Lead Instructor for the OC Continuing Education Department, said Odessa College has an absolute, unwavering commitment to education and training, and the best it can be done. OSHA also has an absolute commitment to worker safety, both of which has had the same philosophy since their inception. The powerful alliance, what it can do is enhance the programs that the college already has and those that we're bringing to the table in the future. Because the programs are enhanced by default, the training that the students and safety professionals that come here for training and certification truly reap the benefit of that reward of this alliance, McCann said. Occupational Safety and Environmental Technology Department Chair Jessica Jordan had students from the OC Tech's OSET program on hand. This group of young women and men are absolutely amazing. They have proven to be the best of the best. This alliance provides our academic associate and bachelor's degree students with a direct line of communications on the initiatives and compliance assistance that OSHA provides to better our workforce here in the Permian Basin. More importantly, though, it provides the foundational strength that our safety programs, whether it be continuing education or academic program, are required to provide to our students. Effective training, education, professional safety, and health certifications, Jordan said. These elements are the foundation of our academic degree, and this has provided the Board of Certified Safety Professionals with a standing to acknowledge our academic program as a valid occupational health and safety program, a degree program. Further, this gives our program the opportunity to push our academic degree programs farther and propose to Odessa College an application to the Board of Certified Safety Professionals for it to be recognized now as a qualified academic program. This recognition provides our BAAS graduates with the professional academic designation of a graduate safety professional. This group right here deserves every bit of this OSHA alliance because, again, this is the future of the Permian Basin standing right here with us, Jordan said. OSHA Area Director Elizabeth Linda Rouse said they have been working on and talking about this alliance for a couple of years. We started thinking about it in earnest last year, and here we are today as it comes to fruition, Ralph said. At OSHA, we want to see seeking help established as a core value in every workplace in America, and we want the business to align themselves with operational values and best practices that go beyond compliance to ensure that the worker and safety is protected. Safety must be enterprise-wide, value-driven. That means developing an effective safety and health management team. It means listening and learning through worker participation and striving to be an industry leader, Ralph said. OC President Gregory Williams said, "There is a reason OSHA exists." He added that a lot of people throughout history have gone to work and not come home to their families. Most of those that returned to their families were disabled or lost limbs and could not work in the future. That's why OSHA exists, because there was a time in our history where we put profit ahead of people. We don't have to do that. We have learned, we've grown, and we know that we can be most profitable when we take care of our people, because really, that's why we're here. It's about taking care of family. This alliance is beautiful because it allows us to teach people who will go into the world to work and will be embedded in companies all over the world and help keep workers safe, Williams said. They will help production to be enhanced. They will help us to retain employees longer and longer. They will help us to have populations who understand that it is not only the bottom line, but it's also the brother and the sister that's important, he added.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, November 25th. Permian Resources turns focus to smaller acquisitions. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Two major deals put Permian Resources on the radar of energy watchers. First was last year's combination of Colgate Energy and Centennial Resources into the $7 billion Permian Resources. The second was the just-completed $4.5 billion acquisition of Earthstone Energy. Future such megadeals are not off the table, but the company also sees value in smaller acquisitions, said James Walter, co-chief executive officer of Permian Resources. The deal to acquire Earthstone was almost a year in the works, he told attendees at the Hart Energy Executive Oil Conference. He said he, co-CEO Will Hickey, and their team were focused on companies with inventory that could compete for capital, noting that the company has robust inventory. Quote, we got tips from bankers and others in the industry who said, don't underestimate Earthstone or the quality of their Delaware Basin inventory. Neither the bankers nor the stock market appreciated the quality. We saw attractive inventory, a high-quality business that was not appreciated, he said. They also liked that the Earthstone assets were very accretive to earnings. Walter said the Delaware Basin is core of the company's business, taking about 90% of its capital expenditures. But as they dig into the Midland Basin assets that came with Earthstone, quote, the more we like it, it has a deeper bench of inventory than we thought and a lot of southern locations screen well for us, end quote. He said the company wants to better understand that portion of the basin before doing any portfolio rationalization. Quote, as we continue to grow, we're still extremely flexible, Walter told his audience. We are open to anything that makes sense, and we welcome people reaching out to us, end quote. He pondered the future of the oil and gas industry in general, noting that since it is generating massive amounts of cash flow, it is becoming more attractive to investors. He also pondered the future of the Permian Basin specifically, wondering how much recovery of original oil in place is possible, or if the next breakthrough, akin to the unconventional shales, is just a decade away. Quote, though we're not seeing anything, the industry and the Permian Basin in particular are impressive in their technical advances. We're getting better, faster, cheaper. I wouldn't bet against this industry or the Permian Basin, he said. When he and Hickey decided to move to Midland in 2015 and found Colgate Energy, they didn't expect the growth they've experienced, Walter said. Quote, Permian Resources is so much bigger than we ever expected. If we had been asked 8 years ago if we'd built a 350,000-barrel-a-day company, we would have laughed. Our ambition was smaller, but our goal was to build the best Delaware-focused company we could. Our expectations were much lower, end quote. He acknowledged that they have had a number of opportunities to sell the company, but, quote, we like the opportunity to grow more than the opportunity to sell. The opportunities we get today are as good as they've ever been, he said. And he praised his new hometown. Quote, without a doubt, we could not have built the business we've built without the people of Midland, Walter said. Carbon capture projects will be hot topics at CO2 conference. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. A focus on greenhouse gas emissions, and particularly those emanating from the nation's oil fields, has given rise to a number of projects designed to capture and sequester emissions. Quote, given just free market stimulation, a lot of the CO2 capture space is just crazy, said Steve Melzer, director of the annual CO2 conference, scheduled to be held at the Bush Convention Center on December 4th through 7th. Quote, the legislature and administration have realized that and, instead of punishing emitters, are trying to incentivize capture. It's an American solution, Melzer told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Tax incentives and regulatory moves designed to incentivize carbon capture and sequestration have created a lot of impetus for emitters to try minimizing emissions, capturing them, and monetizing them, he continued. Quote, there are quite a few emission sources in the Permian Basin, and the pipelines that are coming in are another potential source, he said. Government incentives, quote, work in our favor, trying to capture emissions from cement plants, natural gas processing plants, power generating plants, natural gas and coal, Melzer said. There are challenges. Infrastructure is needed to capture the emissions, and emission volumes need to be sufficient to justify the cost of the infrastructure. Then there is the composition of the gases themselves. Gas streams that are more diluted can be more challenging to make profitable. Occidental Petroleum's Stratus direct air capture plant under construction in Ector County is sure to be a topic at the conference, and Melzer said there may be skepticism about the technology. Skeptics don't realize how huge are the incentives in place. He says he knows of three other billion-dollar carbon capture projects under consideration for the region, incentivized by 45Q tax credits. Not all of them will be built, he said, but, quote, my guess is they're here because of our infrastructure, our reservoir knowledge, and our reservoir quality, end quote. The possibilities of such projects, along with what's happening in terms of regulations, government policy, tax policies, and legal concerns, will be the focus of days 2 and 3 at the conference. The first day involves a field trip to the Goldsmith-Landreth unit in Ector County. The final day of the conference will return to its beginnings, offering case histories from the region's decades of experience handling CO2 and utilizing it in enhanced oil recovery from the horizontal San Andreas to projects in Canada. Melzer has seen the conference evolve from its focus on CO2-based EOR to today's opportunities for CO2-based EOR with storage, and he sees it playing a role as the Permian Basin's shale revolution matures. Quote, we'll address what happens in mature horizontal plays, he said. I see us taking over the next phase of the Permian Basin after we've run the gamut of shale. ProPetro CEO sees demand for next-gen equipment. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Oilfield service companies continue grappling with a downturn in demand for their services as oil and natural gas producers constrain spending to focus on capital discipline and returning cash to shareholders. Quote, supply and demand in the fracturing market has been quite fluid coming out of COVID, said Sam Sledge, Chief Executive Officer of ProPetro Services. I think it's safe to say 20% of drilling rigs and crews have come off the market through the back half of the year, end quote. But Sledge told attendees at this year's Hart Energy Executive Oil Conference that while demand has fallen, there are exceptions. Quote, where overall completion equipment is 15% to 20% underutilized, what I call the next generation of equipment is 100% utilized and undersupplied, he said. He described the next generation as dual fuel and electric fleets. That is why his company has invested in new fleets, recently deploying its second electric fleet, quote, and the results look promising, end quote. Two more electric fleets are on the way. A third-generation oil field services provider, Sledge told his audience the term industrialization is appropriate, but more can be done. It's not uncommon for a ProPetro crew to be on a frack site and see a frack sand truck driving west and passing by a nearby sand mine because of agreements with customers. Quote, that's not the most efficient way, he said. We should shorten the supply chain and supply lines every chance we get, end quote. Looking ahead, he said he's skeptical that activity will significantly increase in the coming year, pointing to what's happening with the drilled uncompleted wells, or DUC, inventory. Quote, the exploration and production sector has migrated to a just-in-time model, he explained. It's hard to see equipment utilization returning to 100%, he said, as ProPetro's top customers have very much dialed down their drilling rig and frack crew cadence. Quote, companies like us and our sophisticated peers don't need that 100% utilization, he said. There's so much efficiency, companies like us that are well capitalized can thrive, end quote. The future of fracturing will be partly remote, taking engineers and fluid technicians off location to operate fracturing projects remotely. Quote, we move fluids under high pressures and it's dangerous, so there will be a human need to appropriately manage the work. It will be safer. It will also be more remotely operated, Sledge said. As the industrialization of the industry proceeds, Sledge said ProPetro and its peers need to start thinking of each completion site as a little manufacturing facility. While it's not uncommon to see 20 to 30 pieces of equipment and 30 crew members on site, he predicted, quote, we will wheel in boxes and instead of 30 pieces of equipment, it will be half that, and instead of 30 people, it will be 10, end quote. Energy analyst refutes dumb things said about energy. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Conversations about the future of energy have included smart comments and dumb comments, according to Walker Moody, president, Pickering Energy Partners. One dumb thing is, we can switch energy sources quickly. Wrong, Walker Moody, president, Pickering Energy Partners, told attendees at Hart Energy's Executive Oil Conference at the Horseshoe. He pointed out the transition from biomass, wood, and dung to coal to oil and natural gas took as long as 100 years. Quote, fossil fuels are going to be the source of energy for the world for the foreseeable future, the Midland native said. Further, the world needs more energy, not less. He cited several reasons for that declaration. Approximately 30% of the population still uses wood to heat their homes. the growing use of artificial intelligence and Bitcoin mining, which consumes thousands and thousands of megawatts of energy, despite the drive to replace coal with cleaner natural gas, Moody noted coal consumption hit all-time highs in 2022. That's because, he explained, the world needs cheap, abundant sources of fuel. Consumers should prepare for a short-term spike in oil prices due to the Israel-Hamas war and its possible spread to countries that are major oil producers. Quote, "We don't think there's a Middle East premium in prices, but we are having lots of meetings to see what happens if prices spike to $150, and we think that's possible," Moody said. He forecast oil prices will remain around $80 through 2027, supported by constrained supplies, a focus on prices by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, atrophy in Russia's production infrastructure, and a slow energy transition. But prices could also be impacted by OPEC returning the barrels it has curtailed to the market, which he said could send prices back to $60. Quote, "The U.S. is no longer the swing producer," Moody said. Quote, "Capital discipline is ingrained. The industry has turned a deaf ear to political requests to raise output and lower prices. The industry is seeing higher costs, and reserves are harder to develop," end quote. That led him to another dumb thing being said, which is, alternatives can power the world now. Moody described decarbonization as a megatrend that will require the support of governments, individuals, companies, and investors, and take decades to accomplish, along with a $3 trillion per year price tag. Crude oil, quote, "has a long runway, but the world will use less at some point," he said. Still, he predicted that before global oil demand falls below 50 million barrels a day, quote, "our children will be retired," end quote. Locus Bioenergy's EOR technology certified. The story was written by Melon McEwen, oil editor. Oil and natural gas producers are increasingly having their production certified as responsibly produced in an effort to highlight their environmental initiatives and open their production to markets seeking responsibly produced low-carbon fuels. Now, for the first time, an enhanced oil recovery technology has been certified as reducing carbon intensity and boosting production. Quote, "First and foremost, our business has been to help operators increase production," Marty Shumway, senior vice president at Locus Bioenergy, told a reporter Telegram of the company's SUEOR STEM biosurfactant technology that was just certified by SGS. The certified treatments have a smaller micelle size and penetrate further into nanopores to mobilize oil other treatments can't reach, reduces surface and interfacial tension lower and faster than chemical surfactants for higher efficacy at lower usage rates, and have more active sites per molecule, resulting in better multifunctionality than chemical surfactants. In terms of lower carbon intensity, the oil produced using the technology has a lower carbon footprint. The treatments can be applied using only one pump truck, which reduces the carbon footprint, chemical usage, and cost, and conserves resources such as water, diesel, and sand used in traditional refracs. According to Shumway, the certification was based on actual historical performance data that is public record. The results spanned from 2017 to 2021. Two scenarios were reviewed. The first scenario compared wells treated with an ESSER EOR stem treatment and those that weren't. That scenario showed a 7% reduction in carbon intensity of production on a per-barrel basis across 10 years, plus a 10% overall boost in production. The second scenario looked at the carbon intensity reduction by pulling back on drilling and fracking while maintaining production. This scenario is more relevant overseas, where production allocations are common. The treatments allow operators to produce the allocated target with less drilling. In this scenario, the estimated impact for each well not drilled and completed with hydraulic fracturing is a 20% reduction in carbon intensity per barrel, plus reductions in water, diesel, sand, and chemical use. Quote, "We've always focused on performance and price. This has the added benefit of both improved performance and the ability to have sustainable chemicals," Shumway said during a telephone interview. The treatments contain the company's novel biosurfactants, which are biodegradable and made from renewable raw materials, such as fatty acids and sugar, as an ingredient. Quote, "However, the real environmental impact is not the sustainability of that singular ingredient itself. It's the full treatment's ability to lower carbon intensity of oil production and conserve natural resources," Shumway said. Other products include biosurfactant technology for enhanced wellbore remediation with acid stimulation fluid systems and an ESG-friendly biosurfactant-based cleaner for midstream oil and gas cleaning. Shumway said all the company's products are in use throughout the Permian Basin. Quote, "Our chemistry does play nicely in higher total dissolved solids brines," he said. For now, he said the company's near-term development focus is chemistry for enhanced oil recovery and hydraulic fracturing. Quote, "Our research and development is always looking at needs," he said. "We have a lot in the pipeline," end quote. Certified gains. According to the certification, oil and gas production companies utilizing just a single application of Locus's ESSER EOR stem technology reap multiple benefits, including carbon intensity reduction, at least a 7% reduction in carbon intensity of oil and gas production based on the most conservative historical performance readings, going up to 20% at scale. Cost. In Texas, an opportunity for a 50% reduction in the 4.6% excise taxes on all, not just incremental oil produced with Locus's EOR technology for 10 years. Revenue. A minimum 10% production increase, which can result in $300,000 plus in additional annual revenue from an average 100 BPD well, excluding tax credits. Each oil and gas well that does not need to be fracked or drilled saves water. Reduction of 25 Olympic-sized swimming pools worth of water. Diesel. Conserves enough diesel fuel to drive around the Earth's equator more than 450 times. Sand. Elimination of the mining and transportation of 8,500 tons of sand, the second most used resource on the planet, the volume needed to build a half mile of freeway. Chemicals. Exclusion of 50,000 gallons or more of chemicals.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. Midland Health. Best way to avoid the flu is with a vaccine. The flu is a contagious respiratory illness caused by influenza viruses that infect the nose, throat, and sometimes the lungs. It can cause mild to severe illness and at times can lead to death. Flu symptoms usually come on suddenly. People who have the flu often feel some or all these symptoms. Fever or feeling feverish / chills, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, muscle or body aches, headaches, fatigue, tiredness. Some people may have vomiting and diarrhea, though this is more common in children than adults. It's important to note that not everyone with the flu will have a fever. The flu viruses spread mainly by tiny droplets made when people with flu cough, sneeze, or talk. These droplets can land in the mouths or noses of people who are nearby. Less often, a person might get the flu by touching a surface or object that has the flu virus on it, and then touching their own mouth, nose, or possibly their eyes. People with the flu are most contagious in the first 3 to 4 days after their illness begins. The time from when a person is exposed and infected with the flu to when symptoms begin is about 2 days, but can range from about 1 to 4 days. Testing for the flu is easy at many clinics and physician offices. Antiviral medication is available if used early to help alleviate your flu symptoms. The best way to prevent the flu is by getting a flu vaccine each year. The flu vaccine has been shown to reduce flu-related illnesses and the risk of serious flu complications that can result in hospitalization or even death. Centers for Disease Control, CDC, also recommends everyday preventative actions like staying away from people who are sick, covering coughs and sneezes, and frequent hand washing to help slow the spread of germs that cause respiratory illnesses like the flu. The 2023-2024 influenza vaccine covers the new influenza A H1N1 PDM09 component, A/Darwin, H3N2, and influenza B/Singapore, two separate lineage virus vaccine antigens. All individuals age 6 months and older should receive a flu vaccine. There are now egg-free vaccines available for those with egg allergies. High-dose influenza vaccine is recommended for those 65 years and older. Covering your coughs and sneezes with a tissue or into the corner of your elbow is best to contain the droplet spread of the flu. Washing your hands often and avoid touching the mucous membranes of your eyes, nose, and mouth will help prevent you catching the flu. Midland Health. Midland Health's Achi Nike receives Daisy Award. Midland Health is proud to announce that Scholastica Achi Nike has been awarded the prestigious Daisy Nurse Leader Award. The award is part of the Daisy Foundation's programs to recognize the superhuman efforts nurses perform every day. The Daisy Award is a special honor given to extraordinary nurses for the compassionate contributions they make every day, going beyond expectations. Receiving a Daisy Award means Scholastica has made a difference in the life of a patient, family, or colleague they will never forget. And she joins a worldwide community of extraordinary nurses, nursing faculty, and students. Scholastica, with 14 years of nursing experience, has just joined the master's program at Western Governors University. She plays a vital role in the Safe Patient Handling Program at Midland Memorial Hospital, working under the CAPE program. Her main objective is to ensure the successful implementation of fall prevention strategies for patients and staff covering the entire hospital premises. Quote, Scola is a role model for staff and peers alike in her work ethic. She is tenacious when it comes to finding solutions and digging into the details of patient safety events, but doing so in a way that makes staff feel safe and heard. She knows how to relate to the bedside staff and the challenges that go along with providing care in a dynamic environment. Scola is well deserving of this award, and I know that she will continue to advocate for staff and patient safety. She is a servant leader who will continue to inspire others well into the future, end quote, said Dr. Kit Bredemus, Chief Nursing Officer at Midland Memorial Hospital. In addition to the Daisy Award for Extraordinary Nurses, the foundation expresses gratitude to the nursing profession internationally, in over 5,500 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing. More information is available at daisyfoundation.org. Midland Health is proud to recognize Scholastica for her hard work and dedication to providing compassionate care. Sleep. Nearly 1 in 5 adolescents using melatonin to sleep. Regular use of melatonin to help kids sleep has become, quote, exceedingly common, end quote, with nearly 1 in 5 adolescents, 19%, using it, according to research published in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. But in addition, younger children, including about 6% of preschoolers ages 1 to 4 and 18% of elementary school kids 5 to 9, are being given melatonin by their parents as a sleep aid, most often as gummies or chewable tablets, the study found. The findings were based on information from the parents of 993 children ages 1 to 14. In its natural form, melatonin is a hormone produced in the brain that regulates a person's sleep-wake cycles. More melatonin is produced and secreted when it is dark, prompting sleepiness, and less when it is light, signaling the body to be awake. Those who still have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep sometimes turn to a melatonin supplement, which can be purchased over-the-counter without a prescription. Because melatonin is considered a dietary supplement, it is not as tightly regulated by the Food and Drug Administration as medications. The researchers also warn that the actual amount of melatonin in a supplement has been shown to vary greatly from the dosage indicated on the label. The American Academy of Pediatrics urges parents to discuss sleep issues with their child's pediatrician before trying melatonin and to consider melatonin use by children only as a short-term aid to help establish good bedtime routines or reset sleep schedules after school breaks or summer vacations. The researchers, however, found that kids' use of melatonin usually was not one time, but regular, with preschoolers having taken the supplement for 12 months. Elementary school children for 18 and adolescents for 21. The study also noted that little research has been done on the long-term safety of melatonin use by kids. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. Midland Health, best way to avoid the flu is with a vaccine. The flu is a contagious respiratory illness caused by influenza viruses that infect the nose, throat, and sometimes the lungs. It can cause mild to severe illness and at times can lead to death. Flu symptoms usually come on suddenly. People who have the flu often feel some or all these symptoms: fever or feeling feverish / chills, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, muscle or body aches, headaches, fatigue, tiredness. Some people may have vomiting and diarrhea, though this is more common in children than adults. It's important to note that not everyone with the flu will have a fever. The flu viruses spread mainly by tiny droplets made when people with flu cough, sneeze, or talk. These droplets can land in the mouths or noses of people who are nearby. Less often, a person might get the flu by touching a surface or object that has the flu virus on it, and then touching their own mouth, nose, or possibly their eyes. People with the flu are most contagious in the first 3 to 4 days after their illness begins. The time from when a person is exposed and infected with the flu to when symptoms begin is about 2 days, but can range from about 1 to 4 days. Testing for the flu is easy at many clinics and physician offices. Antiviral medication is available if used early to help alleviate your flu symptoms. The best way to prevent the flu is by getting a flu vaccine each year. The flu vaccine has been shown to reduce flu-related illnesses and the risk of serious flu complications that can result in hospitalization or even death. Centers for Disease Control, CDC, also recommends everyday preventative actions like staying away from people who are sick, covering coughs and sneezes, and frequent hand washing to help slow the spread of germs that cause respiratory illnesses like the flu. The 2023-2024 influenza vaccine covers the new influenza A H1N1 PDM09 component, A/Darwin, H3N2, and influenza B/Singapore, two separate lineage virus vaccine antigens. All individuals age 6 months and older should receive a flu vaccine. There are now egg-free vaccines available for those with egg allergies. High-dose influenza vaccine is recommended for those 65 years and older. Covering your coughs and sneezes with a tissue or into the corner of your elbow is best to contain the droplet spread of the flu. Washing your hands often and avoid touching the mucous membranes of your eyes, nose, and mouth will help prevent you catching the flu. Video conferencing. Zoom fatigue may take toll on brain and heart. Does a session on Zoom, FaceTime, or Microsoft Teams leave you drained and listless? You're not the only one. Since video conferencing skyrocketed in popularity with the early days of the pandemic, use of such technology has soared. So have anecdotal accounts of a phenomenon some call, quote, Zoom fatigue, end quote, a unique state of exhaustion reported by those who feel wrung out after video calls. A recent brain monitoring study supports the phenomenon, finding a connection between video conferencing in educational settings and physical symptoms linked to fatigue. The study, published in the journal Scientific Reports, looked for physiological signs of fatigue in 35 students attending lectures on engineering at an Austrian university. Half of the class attended the 50-minute lecture via video conference in a nearby lab and a face-to-face lecture the following week, while the other half attended first in person, then online. Participants were monitored with electroencephalogram, EEG, and electrocardiogram, ECG, instruments that recorded electrical activity in the brain and their heart rhythms. They also participated in surveys about their mood and fatigue levels. The researchers searched for physical changes correlated with mental fatigue, including distinctive brain waves, reduced heart rate, and hints the nervous system might be trying to compensate for growing exhaustion during the lecture. There were, quote, notable, end quote, differences between the in-person and online groups, the researchers write. Video participants' fatigue mounted over the course of the session, and their brain states showed they were struggling to pay attention. The group's moods varied too, with in-person participants reporting they felt livelier, happier, and more active, and online participants saying they felt tired, drowsy, and, quote, fed up, end quote. Overall, the researchers write, the study offers evidence of the physical toll of video conferencing and suggests that it, quote, should be considered as a complement to face-to-face interaction, but not as a substitute, end quote. They say the research should be replicated in business settings and homes to get a more accurate sense of how such sessions affect participants, calling for further studies that include more portions of the brain and a broader participant base. The research was conducted as part of, quote, Technostress in Organizations, end quote, an Austrian-funded project devoted to collecting hard evidence about how technology affects human bodies and brains. Other studies published over the course of the project covered, quote, digital detoxes, end quote, workplace interruptions, and social network use. Just how germy is that shopping cart? Is it true that shopping carts are covered in an unusual amount of germs? The science. With Black Friday having taken place last week, one of the biggest shopping days of the year, keep in mind that, yes, shopping carts, particularly the handles and seats, can harbor a lot of germs. Research has shown there can be more bacteria on shopping carts than on surfaces in public restrooms, airports, bus stations, and shopping malls. In a 2012 study, researchers swabbed 85 grocery carts for certain digestive tract germs. About 72% tested positive for some form of fecal bacteria. The bacteria may have originated from many things, including children with dirty diapers riding in the cart, cross-contamination from handling raw meat products while shopping, or bird droppings while sitting in the grocery store parking lots, said Charles Gerba, a microbiologist at the University of Arizona and senior author of the study. Bacteria, as well as viruses, can stay viable on certain surfaces from hours to weeks. Shopping carts are noteworthy partly because of the number of hands that touch them, and partly because of the amount of time a shopper is exposed to them. Unlike a three-second swipe of a doorknob or toilet handle, a shopping cart is a longer-term relationship, with more opportunity to come into contact with pathogens as you push it through the store. The good news is that experts do not believe shopping carts represent a major health risk, because in most cases, the dose of germ exposure will not be high enough to cause illness. For instance, with Shigella, a gastrointestinal bacterium, it may take 10 organisms to cause illness. Whereas with Salmonella, it may take 100,000, said John Schwartzberg, an infectious disease professor at the University of California, Berkeley, School of Public Health. Quote, the dose makes the poison, end quote, he said. William Schaffner, a professor of infectious diseases and preventive medicine at Vanderbilt University, said he is not especially concerned about germ exposure from shopping carts, but to be safe, he practices good hand hygiene and encourages others to do the same. Experts advise washing your hands or using hand sanitizer before shopping so that you don't contribute additional germs. Using disinfecting wipes, which are available in many stores, to wipe down the shopping cart, particularly the handle and seat. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, or mouth during your shopping trip, and use hand sanitizer after you leave the store. Self-checkout touch screens can be germy, too. In one test of 17 touch screens, researchers detected fecal bacteria, including E. coli, on more than half of them. One was even contaminated with methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA. The bottom line, shopping carts are known to be contaminated with bacteria and viruses. While it's not a major health risk, it makes sense to use hand sanitizer and a wipe the handle and seat with a disinfecting wipe. Avoid touching your face until you can wash your hands.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.